Hello and welcome to another episode of BTS by the Book, a podcast that explores BTS, the group we all know and love, through books about BTS, one chapter at a time. As always, I am your host, the BTS Bookworm. There are various reasons why I call myself that, although some others may use the nickname. I use it because I am a university librarian who thinks about books a lot. I use books a lot. When I discover something new that intrigues me, I go to books, which is what I did when I first discovered BTS. And so the focus is on a book, one chapter at a time, for each episode. This episode is no different. The 2 or 3 seconds you heard from a song to begin the episode was a lesser-known track to me. It's simply called See, which is a track from one of the Love Yourself albums. Now, that song has a direct tie-in to the chapter of the day. So hold that thought, because we're going to get there. But the book for today is called BTS Art Revolution, subtitled BTS Meets Deleuze. Now, that's a French philosopher, and I may have butchered the name, but it's spelled D-E-L-E-U-Z-E. I can never pronounce French very well. So anyway, BTS Meets Deleuze is the subtitle. This is written by Ji-Yong Lee. Now, she is at the time of the writing, was a professor of philosophy at a university in Seoul. She is almost one of a kind when it comes to her education, 2 MAs in philosophy and film studies, and I bet you by now she has 2 PhDs. And at the time she wrote the book, it sounded like she was finishing her second. So, not your everyday author, to be sure, and definitely not your everyday author of a BTS book. This book was published by Parecia Publishers in 2019. I believe the Korean edition was from 2018. There are 4 translators credited on the title page of this book, and the book is just over 180 pages. Now, as I mentioned a second ago, Deleuze was a French philosopher from the second half of the 20th century, and some of his philosophy had to do with art or the arts, and I'm going to let the author speak for herself in a minute, as I share a few lines from the introduction, which is a sizable introduction in this book. I barely understand philosophical concepts. I can hardly ever try to communicate them to someone else, and I don't dare do that with Deleuze, for sure. This is an interesting book. It's got 2 parts. Part 1 and Part 2, and each part has, I don't know what the expression is, but each part has a Chapter 1, each part has a Chapter 2, which is interesting. So this book has 2 Chapter 1s, 2 Chapter 2s, and it's Part 1 that has 3 chapters. So this book has a total of 5 chapters. The introduction is so lengthy, it might as well be a chapter. In fact, someday I may come back and talk about the introduction alone. Number of appendices. This book is not a go-to book for pictures, photos of BTS. It's just all about the text and the information here. And this book has a preface to the English edition, and it's only a few pages long. And so the one line I wanted to read from this portion reads as follows. I quote, "Thus, this small book is about BTS at first glance, but it is also about the ongoing changes in society and the new art form that helps us to sense these changes as they occur." Now, end quote. I have looked at other books about BTS that seemed, at least in the chapters we've considered, they seem to use BTS as kind of like a hook to draw in listeners or readers, but then the author will proceed to discuss something that's not entirely BTS related. So when I first read this line from the preface, I started to get worried that that's what we were in store for in this book. And I'll just tell you right now, so far, especially when it comes to the chapter we're looking at today, that is definitely not the case. So that's encouraging to me. The introduction proper is 14 pages long, and like I said, I may have to return to this at some point because it reads just like a chapter. It's called BTS, Their Revolutionary Implications and a New Form of Art. So the introduction even has a title. Anyway, this author talks about her background, researcher philosophy, researcher in film philosophy, which doesn't have a direct connection to BTS as much as, you know, they're artists, they practice art forms, and she definitely has a lot of interest in art, but then also some implications for society when it comes to art. And this introduction slash chapter just goes on, and I'm skipping a lot of it because I want to spend most of our time with the chapter. But towards the very end of her introduction, last couple pages, she has a section called Why I Write This Book. I don't know if that should have been past tense, why I wrote this book, but anyway, that's what it says here. And I want to read a few lines from this section. On page 24, she actually makes a Beatles comparison, and I've heard of a number of Beatles comparisons with BTS. Maybe you have too. This was interesting. She mentions how, thanks to the music of BTS and how it inspired people, I'm sorry, the music of the Beatles, sorry, and how their music was so inspirational to people during their time period, 60s, 70s. This author believes, and she may not be the only one, that some of that influence, because it was so global, that it may have actually led, or it contributed to the fall of the Soviet Union. And there's a book she mentions, How the Beatles Rocked the Kremlin, that where she gets some of that info, I imagine. Well, obviously, she is using that to talk about the truly global influence for good that BTS also is a part of. And I want to read a few lines here, not too much. I'd love to encourage you to get a copy of the book and read it yourself, but here are a few sentences from the very end of the intro. Quote, "With the BTS phenomenon, this book attempts to examine radical transformations of society in two parts." Remember, I said there were two parts. "In part one, I will examine social and cultural implications of the BTS phenomenon. This part traces the message that BTS delivers, activities of ARMY in relation to BTS, and the implications of social and cultural changes brought about by ARMY's actions." Okay, so we're going to talk more about that because the chapter for today is from this part one. She talks about a final chapter of part one dealing specifically with Deleuze, this French philosopher. She uses the term rhizome, spelled Rhizome. And thank goodness we don't have to know what that means in order to understand the content of our chapter for today, because I still don't quite understand what that is, but there's a section of the book devoted specifically to that, and so we will try to get our heads around it when we get to that section, which could be a month and a half from now before we return to this book. But anyway, that's for later. The second part, which we won't deal with tonight, of the book examines the aesthetic aspect of the BTS phenomenon, the advent of a new art form, and its social role. Okay, so for part one, we're exploring the social and cultural implications of the BTS phenomenon. So keep that in mind. That's probably the most important statement I could share regarding this chapter. It's chapter two of part one. Remember, there are two chapter twos in the book. This one's from part one. It's entitled Deconstructing Social Hierarchy. It's got five sections in it. I will share what the names of each section is when we get to them. It's 18 pages long, so it's there's a lot of info here. And there are just a few paragraphs as kind of an intro in this chapter before we get to the first section that has a title. But there's a lot of good info in this little setup section here. And just as a reminder, these podcast episodes attempt to cover overview and then review. And so often they just kind of get jumbled together. And so be on the lookout for that even today. The key phrase for this setup section is interactive or interactivity. And, you know, that's just the author's way of describing, this, in particular, the social media aspect of the BTS phenomenon, which obviously we all know is absolutely huge. And it's interactive. It's not just one way correspondence. It's interactive. Army and fans get to interact with BTS, and BTS interact with Army, and they're really good about that. I think in this section, let me check. I'm trying to think if there are particular social media outlets mentioned in this section. I know there's some coming up. But the next paragraph or two is a major setup for the first section. It's like mostly an introduction to the first part of this chapter. And that chapter is called Horizontal Fantasy. I had no idea what to expect before I started reading that. Didn't know where the author was going. But I'll tell you, I haven't read something quite like this that kind of pulled back the curtain for me when it came to what it is, what one of the big things is that sets BTS apart for me, and what has made them seem like such a historical phenomenon, like nothing we've ever seen before, and maybe nothing we'll ever see again. Who knows? But it does have a foundation of this interactiveness or interactivity. And I want to let the author describe what this is. Again, we're not into the section called Horizontal Fantasy yet. It's just a setup. But here's a quote. BTS's success, or their close relationship with fandom, was not achieved by using social media the way it was used by existing power and order. In other words, their success is not a result of utilizing horizontal interactivity of the online platform as a way of reincorporating it into the vertical hierarchy of capital or power. The BTS phenomenon, which cannot be separated from the activities of their fandom army, was able to dismantle the existing hierarchy by realizing the revolutionary potential of interactivity in a horizontal and acentered form. This also made possible the mutual solidarity between BTS and ARMY. So, that may not have made a lot of sense, but here's the way I understand it. And this is going to be a big part of this first section of the chapter. So much of a fandom for other groups, just the average musical group, or the average group of any kind, not just musical, but has been mostly vertical, with the celebrity, with their kind of otherworldly status, seemingly, they were kind of up high, almost like on a pedestal or up in the heavens, so to speak, which is, you know, just would be a way to describe celebrity status, I suppose, compared to everybody else. And whenever people like that, whenever they typically try to interact with their fandom, it's very vertical. It's done in such a way that, kind, without intending to, it keeps the people who aren't celebrities in their place, so to speak, kind of down low. So even though those correspond, that interaction can be something the fans really appreciate, it's not at all what BTS strives for and what they're known for. You don't feel, when you interact with BTS through their social media outlets, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, things like that, you don't feel like they're way up above you, like some celebrity that is completely otherworldly, untouchable at the high, very top of the tower or the pyramid, and with you being way at the bottom. There's a closeness. They do things in a way that helps you, makes you feel close to them. Not maybe like just a buddy or a friend, but someone who is not much different than a buddy or friend. Someone who it just feels like they're talking to you when they talk to the camera. And they don't seem to strive to keep that distance from their fandom. And so that's what the horizontal is getting at. We're, as fans, because BTS is intentional about this, they keep us on the same plane as them. Plane. We're on the same plane as them. And so they're not trying to stay distant or high above us. And so it means a lot to them, seemingly, that they maintain this horizontal relationship. We're just on the same plane, everybody. And that's the interactivity they're known for. Whereas that's not an apt description of most groups and their fandom, is what the author is saying here. And so there's a lot more related to that, obviously, in the section called Horizontal Fantasy. And that section begins with a reference to Twitter, YouTube, V Live. Forgot about that a second ago. And how they use things like that to just describe their daily life. Everything from hours and hours of practices and behind the scenes video coverage. Sometimes you'll watch them just eating a meal or a snack. I think of some of their V Live stuff, and you might just watch, you might be watching V eat some noodles or something. And not just for a minute or two, it could be 5 to 10 minutes or more. And, you know, that is a very horizontal type of relationship. You feel like you're just in the room with him. You feel like he's just sitting across the table from you. Not that he's some celebrity who wants nothing to do with you. And so that's the horizontal being preserved there. And there's a reference here to reality shows. Like they're, I'm assuming Run BTS would be something in that realm. Here's a great quote from page 53. The members on these videos appear to be far from the typical picture-perfect celebrities that seem to live in a different world. Fans get to know the members' personalities and various habits, like how they like to sleep. I love that example. That's so simple. That's the kind of thing you know about your roommate or your brother or sister growing up. How do they sleep? Well, you know about BTS too, because they allow us to know it. And so, you know, one of the things I go to often when it comes to just reviewing these chapters in a very straightforward, simple way, I just ask questions like, how well does this chapter reveal the distinctness and the specialness of the group, the BTS group? And this section of this chapter hits the nail on the head like little else does, or it touches on something that very few other books have touched on quite like this before. And I just really, really appreciate this. Another quote that's going to reiterate what I just read from the same page. To these fans, BTS is no longer celebrities on the screen who are distant from the fans' own lives. As BTS shares their worries, ambitions, thoughts, and daily activities, they seem more familiar than friends in real life. And, you know, that's just one of those many things that I don't think about until someone says it. But, and yet I feel it all the time when I'm watching BTS online, especially through YouTube or VLive. I feel it. I just didn't have words to describe it. And that's what I appreciate so much about this section. There's an intimacy described on the next page. You know, the members in their VLive filming, for example, might talk about how much they miss ARMY, how much they miss their fans. And that's just that there's an intimacy there that you don't find with other groups. And boy, so many quotes I want to read here. This is my favorite part from this chapter, in case you couldn't tell. Another quote from page 54, BTS does not create a fantasy of perfect stars on the stage who live in a different world. The fantasy they create is one that is friendly and horizontal. And I'll let that be the last quote from this section. I've already quoted a number of things, but I think that's a good summation of what the author is doing as a whole in this part here. But there's talk in particular about ARMY for the next in the next about four paragraphs, which will conclude this first part of the chapter. And certainly that interactivity is seen in a major way with ARMY in particular and BTS. The next part of this chapter is called Success Achieved by the I ARMY, capital I hyphen ARMY. And that I stands for international, as opposed to, I guess, K ARMY might be Korean. So this is all the non-Korean ARMY, I suppose. So that chapter section is called, again, Success Achieved by the I ARMY. And there's a lot of description here about ARMY activities. In particular, the U.S. gets a lot of attention here, U.S. ARMY. And the first line of this section reads as follows. As spectators who experience the music and content produced by BTS, armies surpass the status of passive consumers. I like that. If there's one thing you could say about army as a whole, is they are not passive consumers. They're not just sitting back, you know, taking in BTS, taking in video, taking in music, etc. They are very proactive. And one thing I wondered, and I'm still wondering a little bit, is in the first part, this horizontal solidarity described by the author, was certainly, I think, something that fell under the umbrella of deconstructing social hierarchy. You know, because there is no hierarchy. You don't feel like there is any hierarchy as a fan of BTS when compared to BTS. Now, this next section, though, the I-Army section, I didn't really get nearly as much of a feeling that the topic truly addressed deconstructing social hierarchy. It read more like a section that was just describing global army activities, in particular U.S. Army. But there wasn't a lot of talk about how that's a deconstruction of social hierarchy in a way. Maybe I'll say more about that when we get done with this section. But this section is quite long. It's, let's see, almost 7 pages long here. And I really feel like there's only maybe one sentence that the author uses to make a connection to this deconstruction of social hierarchy. But so hold that thought. There's talk in this section early on about the volunteers among Army who translate videos and news, any news, you name it, related to BTS. The quote, reads as follows: "Every day, innumerable BTS content is translated into English within a few hours and translated again into various languages. Since BTS posts content multiple times a day, translating takes a great deal of time and labor." There's a reference a few lines later to the Twitter account at BTS_trans, which I imagine a lot of people are familiar with. And there is talk in the next couple of paragraphs about the Army's activities to promote BTS in certain venues that will get their songs in the right, very high in the rankings that mean a lot to Army, mean a lot to music lovers worldwide, like the Billboard charts, for example. And there are references here to increasing view counts on YouTube and Wikipedia, voting, retweeting, and generating hashtags, and all that Army activity that's been going on for quite some time. The next several paragraphs talk about radio play and the importance of radio play, particularly in the U.S., but also in Europe, and how much Army is very proactive pushing that, even in the face of some resistance that's definitely happened over the years. There's about two full pages, two and a half maybe, describing U.S. Army initiatives. There's a distribution map shared of the United States at the bottom of page 57. When I first saw it, I didn't know what to make of it. But it's basically a map that has broken up the United States into a number of regions. And the author talks about how various Army representatives have broken up the U.S. and some leaders of these responsible parties, I should say, of each of these regions, how they're responsible for their region and eliciting more and more help from fellow army in their region. And of course, radio play is talked about for a few paragraphs. There's a reference to something that was new to me, never heard of before, don't know why, but this is, again, all U.S. Army. They talked about a response manual that was shared among a lot of Army in the U.S. When it comes to radio play in particular, what to do when the song that you requested, BTS song, is selected, what to do when it is rejected, what to do when the station does not know BTS, etc., etc. So, boy, talk about proactive. I mean, the, manuals shared with Army so they'll know exactly what to do when interacting with those in charge of radio stations in their areas. There's a reference to BTS's nomination as the top social artist at the 2017 Billboard Music Awards and how much that relied on Army's participation behind the scenes. There's talk about getting albums of BTS in stores like Walmart, Target, obviously getting it on Amazon, and how much Army played a role in that. I didn't know this, but according to the author, just getting BTS on TV in America, on shows like Ellen and Jimmy Kimmel, James Corden, and things like that, the New Year's Eve program in Times Square, things like that, were all dependent, at least early on. Maybe now it's easier for BTS to get on those things. I'm sure, I know it is, I'm sure. But there was a time, because they were Korean, I imagine Army, you know, pushed and pushed behind the scenes. Who knows how many calls and letters, etc., were sent to these program people to get BTS, get their foot in the door. And obviously, it worked in many cases. There's a reference at the bottom of page 59 to something else I wasn't familiar with. And I'm from the U.S., but I didn't know about a 2018 initiative called Boot Camp, which, using a lot of Army phraseology, like target shooting and battle combat skills and platoons and things like that. These are some that the author mentions. There's a snapshot of what the boot camp promotional material looked like on page 60 here. It's the entirety of page 60. And references to marksmanship, camaraderie, things like that. And so the way the author ties all of that in to the deconstruction of social hierarchy theme is to say it took an army, and it was like a battle or a war, getting BTS the attention that Army believed they deserved, especially in markets where the Korean music industry was not getting much play or much attention, namely in America. And that was one of the big hurdles. And so the author does a better job later in this chapter talking about this. But there are all these unwritten rules and orders that made it hard for BTS to get their foot in the door in a market like the U.S. And so the army, they went to battle for BTS. And so that was some of the social hierarchy they were bucking up against. But like I said, the author doesn't talk too much about that until the very, very end, with only a line or two. The next section, page 61 is called Creations of Fans Online Content. So this is all about fan-created content. You know, fans of BTS don't just sit back and let BTS create the content. Fans of BTS create so much content. And you name it, and it's mentioned here. The categories the author delineates are reaction videos, theory videos, cover dance, unboxing, lyrics, and remix videos. That's like six categories. He doesn't talk about all six so much here. He does talk a lot about reaction videos, though. There's a nice full paragraph describing that. You all have seen countless reaction videos, just like I have. But I love the point the author makes here. There's just something about watching. Why I've wondered sometimes, why do I like watching reaction videos so much? The author describes it so well with this quote. In essence, reaction videos work by stimulating the spectator's empathy. When a reactor responds to particular points in the video the same way as the spectator finds their own feelings to be reinforced. So our good feelings about BTS are reinforced when we see other people besides us, you know, reacting the same way we do when we watch videos. There's talk about how some of the reaction videos appeal to non-fans, which will probably make them fans. There's a reference to unlikely fans, you know, watching elderly people or young children reacting to their first experience with BTS. And there are a lot of videos like that out there. So watching these unlikely fans very much appeals. Obviously, it appeals to BTS fans already, but it appeals to a lot of other people too. Those other unlikely fans are likely to become fans because of reaction videos like that. So then the author turns his attention to what she calls analytical videos. So these are videos that involve analysis of some sort. And that sounds very academic and boring, but a lot of the analysis obviously is fun and interesting, and there's so many out there, so many types out there. But the author talks about how many ARMY provide videos in which they have so carefully watched a video, for example, maybe a music video, and maybe looking at every single frame from a video, trying to find every little clue or every interesting thing that's in the background that they can talk about in their own analysis type video. And obviously so many ARMY who don't have the time to do that find that so fascinating. And I know I do too. There's a paragraph talking about one example of this. A YouTuber called Italian ARMY, her analysis of Spring Day, and tying in the meaning of that with the tragic incident from 2014 involving the it was a boat of some kind, maybe a what's the word, ferry of some sort. Yeah, so there's a very full paragraph talking about that. And then this section ends with dance cover talk. You know, there's so many dance covers out there, flash mobs and things like that. And this was the section out of every section in this chapter that I felt like there was no attempt on the author's part to tie in the deconstruction of social hierarchy aspect. I just, maybe it was there, but you had to connect the dots yourself. And I actually had trouble connecting the dots. I found it all very interesting. And I'm not saying it was bad content. I actually enjoyed it quite a bit. Very revealing to me. But no connection in my mind with deconstruction of social hierarchy. All right. That changes quite a bit in the next section, I will say. The next section is called Disruption of Hierarchy Between Languages. And so this is all about language. There's a lot of talk in this section about how Korean speakers have really gone to great efforts to make it easy for non-Korean speakers to participate in everything pertaining to BTS. Just like a Korean speaking fan might be able to. And so some examples would include, K-Army, Korean Army, providing fan chant videos that have all of the pronunciation of Korean words in anglicized or romanized characters, alphabet. So that English-speaking people can easily pronounce these Korean words. They have no idea maybe what they're saying. I don't know, but they can at least pronounce it. And they can chant along with Korean-speaking fans because of the efforts of these K-Army volunteers. There's a reference on page 65 to an app, a smartphone app called Korean Vocab Quiz, the BTS version. Many of you, I imagine, are familiar with that, and so that is another example of the language aspect of this social hierarchy the author is referring to here. One quote is worth sharing with you from page 65. The author says, certain Korean words are frequently used in the romanized form and have become incorporated into the daily vocabulary of fans. And so you might hear terms like hyung or maknae, either the older brother or youngest sibling, respectively. Terms like that being used by English-speaking people as if, you know, they've known what those words mean, and other words like it for quite some time. It's just becoming natural for those types of Korean terms to be used among non-Korean army and fans. I love this quote on page 66. I haven't looked into it enough to know how true this is, but the author says, while other agencies tried to conceal the Korean identity of their artists, Big Hit Entertainment seemed to rather highlight it. Now, that's a strong statement, you know, highlighting it. There is a footnote here. This author does a good job with some footnotes, and there's one there. There's a quote immediately following this from CEO Bang Si-hyuk from a Billboard interview. He says, I'm not a believer in releasing full English songs to the U.S. market, like many K-pop artists have. We must focus on what we do best as K-pop artists and producers and maybe add some special features to which international or U.S. music fans can feel attached. That quote definitely feels dated in 2021. I mean, this, I don't know exactly when that quote was first shared, but you could tell it's 3-4 years old probably, because obviously that has changed at least some since then. And then a very interesting section here, not just to for American Army, but I certainly found it interesting. It's some criticism, well-deserved criticism. There has been for quite some time what the author describes as English-centric and language-based discrimination in the U.S. And in our history has proven that time and again. We have, over the years, have had very little patience with non-English languages being used in any kind of popular mainstream way in America. And it's hard to fight against that history. It's hard to fight against all that backstory. And the author, I think, is right when she says U.S. efforts to subdue all languages under English can be seen as a strategy for control and dominance. Continuing the quote, against this backdrop of language politics, learning to sing a Korean song as an English speaker is more meaningful than it might seem. And that is, apologies to the author. That's her way of saying, of describing how these language issues fall under the umbrella of deconstructing social hierarchy. You know, pushing back against that English-centric discrimination. Wonderful points made in there, very convicting, especially as an American. The last section is the smallest in the chapter. It's called Change Begins Where Established Orders Are Incapacitated. And this barely gets a page and a half. I'll read the first line, quote, the hierarchy challenged by the BTS phenomenon is not limited to the hierarchy of languages. So that's a nice transitional statement from the section before. And this goes on to talk about how major broadcasting channels, especially early on, did not allow much media exposure for BTS. And I believe the reference here is to the Korean broadcasting realm. And the author says, states the obvious, I believe, when she says, this is a quote, this made sense because the existing authority might not have wanted to acknowledge success that happened outside of their control and influence. In other words, they sensed a loss of power that they had firmly grasped for many decades. And her reference, that reference there is to what was certainly in place, firmly in place, when BTS debuted. You know, these big name music producers and companies in Korea being the ones who got all the attention. And any other smaller group, it was almost impossible to break through into the media markets, the major media markets. And so there is a song that actually talks about that in some real clear language. And that's the song C-S-E-A, what people call a hidden track on the Love Yourself Her album. I'm not going to read the lyrics, but I would encourage you to go check out those lyrics in whatever language is you're comfortable with. Wonderful phraseology there. The author ends the chapter with these three sentences, and with apologies to the author for reading so many quotes, I want to end this episode with this quote. As I wrote previously, BTS and ARMY's collaborative achievements of today enact a kind of patricide, that's in quotes, on a social level. Change begins where the existing order has collapsed, after this patricide in which direction will BTS and ARMY grow? Question mark. And BTS became so influential so quickly, even though they were swimming upstream, the author is comparing that to patricide. They in many ways destroyed the hierarchy in the Korean music industry. It was after their debut, maybe a year or two after, it's never been the same. It has not been the same, and obviously there are no signs that it'll ever go back to the way it used to be, thanks largely to the success and the influence of BTS with the help of ARMY, for sure. I can't say enough in review positively about this chapter. It was very well researched. You can really tell that this author does a thorough professional job when it comes to her explorations of BTS. I'm thankful that there wasn't too much hardcore philosophy to work through in this chapter. I think that's coming later. I know it's coming later, but it wasn't here. and so this was a lightweight chapter compared to some of the others, but strongly encourage you to pick up your own copy of the book BTS Art Revolution by Ji Young Lee. Very entertaining, educational read. It will help you become even more appreciative of BTS and your fellow ARMY. As always, I would like to conclude this episode by reminding you that I very much love listeners to support me / this podcast, but not by directly supporting the podcast. I would instead like to encourage you to check out a group called Books for Africa. It's a project I believe that's worthy of BTS and the things that they stand for. It's all about books as well, which I really like. But BFA was founded on a singular mission to end the book famine in Africa, and they've been doing this for a long, long time. You can find them online, booksforafrica.org. You can find out how to donate there. Every little bit helps. If you want to support this podcast in any way, support them, and then send me a note saying, "Hey, BTS Bookworm, I appreciate your podcast so much. I made a donation to BFA." That will be all the thanks and appreciation I need to keep this podcast going. Please use my email, btsbythebook@gmail.com, to share things like that, ask questions, make comments, or recommend books you haven't heard me talk about yet. We are getting very close to our 10th episode. Within the next week, we may have that available already online. The plan for that episode is to do something special, bring into the discussion three chapters from three different books, all focused on one member of BTS. A member whose name I drew out of a hat because I couldn't decide who to start with. But it's going to be all about this one member. I think in the next episode, episode 9, I'll share with you who that person is. But I'll let you guess for a little bit longer. Thank you again for joining me. As always, I thank you for listening. And I thank you for supporting the BTS book industry by picking up your own copy of books like BTS Art Revolution, so many others that we've talked about, please let the authors out there know how much you appreciate their work. That's all for now. We will talk to you soon, next week.